listening to The Issues of Life with marriage, family, and child counselor John Jama. 60 minutes of radio therapy designed to turn issues into opportunities. Now, here's John.
Hello, everyone. This is John Jama. Welcome to another Issue of Life. How much of the present problems or challenges of your life are avoidable? How much of those things that you might list on the list of avoidable conflicts do you really understand are presently avoidable? Yes, if you just understood something, if you just tried to do it a little differently, yes, how many of the supposed problems of our lives, those challenges, are really personally avoidable? You know, most of us in the world have one problem. That's right. We have one problem. And all of the other problems are simply a byproduct of this one big problem, and that is the problem of complexity. Our life has evolved from being complicated to being highly complex. There's just too much going on in our lives, too many things to think about. You know, lives have become filled with what? Stuff. Bogged down in messes in one sort or another, all of which keep us bogged down in activities that bore us, frustrate us, exhaust us, and take all the enjoyment out of being alive. In order to break through that, shall we call it a ceiling of complexity or the problems of complexity, we need to achieve a new level of clarity, simplicity in our personal lives. Let's talk about some of those complexities and some of the things that we probably could do if we would just put our minds to them, willing to learn a few more things. Stay with me in my opening commentary as we talk about these issues of your life. Now pick up the toll-free lines. Let's talk about your life. Let's see if we can get the complexity out. Let's talk about what you could be doing, should be doing, and you know to do. Let's find out why we're not doing more of it. Toll-free 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. My name is John Jolliffe. Give me a call. We've got lines open. We'll be back in just a minute. John Jolliffe, and we're talking about kind of planning your life and living it as you plan. You know, you've got to plan. Every day opportunities pass us by. That's right. And we fail to take advantage of them. That's right. Because we fail to take advantage of the time we have, we miss every opportunity. You know, it sounds easy enough. Decide what you want to do and then go do it. You know, but if life were that simple, most of us wouldn't be frustrated, feeling rushed and behind, wishing we had more time. We got to learn how to use our time, don't we? That's one of the biggest problems of all. Yeah, we have two big problems. One is that our lives are becoming more and more complex. The older and older we get, the more and more we choose and desire to be responsible, the more difficult it becomes because there's always someone willing to administrate more responsibility to us. And just like the person that we are, we sign up, we raise our hand and say, well, I guess I could just fit one more thing in. But at what expense? And at whose expense? Is it yours, your marriage, your family, your children, your health? What's the expense? Tomorrow we're going to be talking at our Second Opinions, our Tuesday night encounter in Long Beach. And if you haven't joined us at one of these encounters, they're every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9 o'clock at the Holiday Inn, right there at the 405 freeway in Lakewood Boulevard, that round building right by the airport in Long Beach. And we'll be talking about personal power. That's right, how to get it and how to keep it. We'll talk about personal power. We'll be talking about goals, and we'll talk about objectives and a number of things about getting organized. Personal power, it certainly involves honesty, isn't it? How many of your present problems and challenges of life are personally avoidable? Okay, let's get on the lines. We've got some toll-free lines, if you'd like, a couple lines open. 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. Let's begin the program talking to Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Welcome to The Issues.
Well, basically, I don't know if I'm stretching a little bit with the subject today, but my problem seems to be that I'm making my relationship with God seem to be a little bit more complex than it should be.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And what I do is I work in downtown L.A., and I don't know, it's kind of a seedy part of town. And I find myself continuing once in a while to be, I guess, drawn into that world, like I'll look at a you know, porno magazine or something.
You know what's interesting about seedy side of town, or the term seedy side? You know what I think it originally meant? I think it really means like a garden, where you have a lot of different kind of seeds. You have wild seed, you have all kinds of pollen and things like that. I think what a seedy side of town means is that there are many opportunities, some of which distract you and draw you away from your objectives.
Yeah, and that's what I think is happening. It's like...
so many distractions.
Yeah, I just find myself making my relationship with God more complex, doing things that I know are wrong, and then I build up guilt and depression over it, and feel like I'm starting at ground zero over and over, and it's like...
well, your personal life with God can't be any more effective or any clearer or simpler than your life with yourself. It's your relationship to your own world that's made it complicated. And then you take this complicated existence and try to somehow work God into it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it just seems like I'm making more trouble for myself than I need to, and I just seem to...
okay, so let's
return to those same, you know, habits.
Okay, let's talk about... if we look at your objectives, now I'm not talking about the objectives that you might put on a 3 to 5 year plan, you know, like go to school, find a woman and marry and get married and all that stuff. I'm not talking about those kind of aspiring objectives. I'm talking about all the distractions, you know, where we say we're off course. You know, if you think about it, those are objectives. You might call them objectionable the next day, but in that very moment, you have a plan, you have an objective to fulfill that, you know. What are some of the objectives that you have that complicate your life?
I guess walk the straight and narrow is what I want to do.
No, that's your high aspiring objectives. But what are some of these seedy objectives, these distracting kinds of things that you pursue on a daily, nightly, weekly basis? Tell me what those objectives are.
Well, I'm not sure exactly as far as being like the things I'm doing that I consider myself missing the mark type thing.
Yeah, what are you doing that you later look back and you say, gosh, why did I do that?
Well, like I said, where I work is these, you know, places where they sell these magazines, and I'll find myself...
okay, pornography.
Yeah, suckered into that. And
okay, what's the objective of the pornography?
I don't know. I just get some cheap rush or something. I don't know.
Okay, and how frequently do you try to plan for this cheap rush?
I'm not sure if it's really planned. I'd say it happens probably about once every couple months, maybe.
Yeah, but you know, there is a plan there. Now, we sometimes think that things happen to us without planning.
Mm-hmm.
Very few of us would ever think that success happens without planning. But we would typically say that all the evil, sinful, you know, shameful events happen impulsively, without a thought, without a plan. I'm here to tell you that if you're involving yourself and you're nurturing the seedy side of your life, all those distractions from the higher aspirations, you have a plan and you have some objectives. And what I would suggest you do, you don't have to do it here on the radio, but what I'd suggest you do is set aside maybe 15 to 20 minutes and give it some serious thought for that intense period, and write down the seedy objectives. And you'll be amazed of how, with some or all of these objectives, there is an unwritten plan to pursue and accomplish these objectives. And once you recognize that you're planning for these things, okay, by not so much not doing other things, but by actually doing these things, you'll see how these things become a part of your life. You are planning these things.
So how do you get yourself to stop planning them?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to interrupt the plan. But you have to know that one exists. And one of the most uncomfortable things in terms of organizing and getting power in your life is that you have to be willing, you have to be courageous enough to look at this other side and to recognize that you are pursuing some things. As uncomfortable as it may be, we all do that. As soon as you have an objective to lose weight, you have another objective to gain a few pounds.
Yeah.
And it is written there. I mean, it is written there. And like, for instance, one thing you do is that whenever you need a sugar rush, whenever you're feeling a little low or a little stressed out, where do? You go for the fiber, or do you go for the chocolate? You see what I mean?
I know what you mean.
So you have an unwritten plan that says when I'm under stress, it's okay to go off my diet.
Yeah, and I do feel more when I'm stressed, you know, leaning towards that angle of my life. When it, you know, like a stressful time, it usually feels like when I'm built up with tension or stress.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've come my best at.
What you'd have to do is you'd have to identify a list of things that you're not happy about,
mm-hmm.
things that stress you out, and feelings that you don't like feeling. List those shadowy, seedy sides, okay, of life. And then look again, even if it's stress. Look how you plan for stress. Look how you live your life to make sure that you accomplish stress. Every one of those seedy things that you wish were not a part of your life is a planned event, has a strategy, and is followed to its successful conclusion. That's my point. Just like success and failure, they're both planned. And the more focused you are, the more likely you are to succeed at those things.
I just
want you to consider it, okay?
Okay.
Now, for you, let's just take pornography.
Mm-hmm.
It's a goal of yours to be involved with pornography, and you have a strategy and a plan to include it in your life. I just want you to be aware of it.
Okay.
Now, if you want to rid yourself of it, then you have to be aware of how you set yourself up for it, okay?
And then avoid that.
Call me back another day when you've taken the time to write out your strategy for pornography.
Okay.
And how you accomplish it, okay?
Right.
And call me back, because you can't eradicate it out of your life if you're not aware of how you plan for it. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Mark, I enjoyed talking to you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yep, we'll be back in 2 minutes. My name is John Jolliffe.
John Jolliffe calls it free and unsolicited information, sometimes painful, but constructive, pushing out the boundaries of what is familiar. He's talking about feedback, the things people say to you about you. In his popular cassette, The Value of Feedback, John encourages us to stretch ourselves by getting feedback from others. How to handle painful feedback, and how to identify helpful feedback and incorporate it into our lives. The Value of Feedback, just $7.95 from The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or if you prefer to use your Visa or MasterCard, call 1-800-4-ISSUES. Be sure to mention that title, The Value of Feedback. The address again, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or call 1-800-447-7837.
This is John Jolliffe, and we are going to talk to Joel. Hello, Joel.
Hey, hi.
Welcome to The Issues.
Thank you. I have one question.
Uh-huh.
Well, I wrote it down, just to make it simpler. Let me see what I wrote down. I said, I don't think I take the time to plan to say the right thing. It seems that I say the wrong word, actually, almost every other day. And my wife...
The wrong word to who?
To my wife.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I say the wrong word. I think...
The wrong word, or?
The word, yeah, I guess, because sometimes I'll say something, anything regarding anything of the past, like a city or a town that I did something wrong back in the past.
Okay.
Before we got married.
All right.
It kind of goes crazy.
So you bring up the past.
I don't really bring up the past. It's, well, just take, for instance, if you would say something, well, I've been in Texas, and I would say, well, yeah, I've been in El Paso, too, and she'll just, like, automatically think that I'm talking about the time that I had down there with some other people or whatever.
And I
don't know if I'm...
So is this your wife being sensitive to your past, or is this your bringing up your past because you're sensitive?
W- Well, I don't bring up my past. It's just that I just say, well, yeah, I've been over there, and...
Give me a most recent for instance.
Okay, the most recent that was regarding San Felipe. I went there about 3 years ago.
Okay, but how did this come up in conversation?
We were talking with somebody else, and we were talking about, you know, with the weather and going out of town and whatever, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, I remember I drove 11 hours, and I had a good time driving because, you know,
okay,
that's not what I did that I enjoyed. It's just the actual fact of driving over there that I enjoyed. And she thinks I meant that, you know, I was talking about my past. The things that I don't, that I...
So you were with a woman down there in San Felipe?
No, I didn't go with a woman, but she didn't like for me to go down there anyways.
And you went down there during your wedding or your...
No. This is like 2 years ago.
Before you got married. Before you married.
Oh, yeah. Long time ago.
Okay. So it feels to me as though your wife has an issue with your past.
Yes.
And she also feels insecure about her present relationship with you or personally insecure about herself. So that she's always thinking about your past or thinking that you're thinking about it.
Yes. I tell her that...
So what is her issue?
That I'm still thinking about my past.
No, and you're not thinking about your past, but you're not thinking about her. You're not satisfied with her.
I think
not
yeah.
fulfilled with her.
Yes,
is that the issue?
I think so. Because sometimes I'll like spend a lot of time with her, and even if I do say something like say a city or whatever. Anything that
refers to a life before her.
Yes. If I'm with her all that time, like say a week straight,
okay,
without me going anywhere,
okay,
she won't mind it. But if I just say, well, I want to go do this, you know, go play basketball, or I gotta go off and do this or whatever.
All right.
And it's not to do anything with friends or anything because I know better right now.
Well, what do you mean? You know better.
Well. That she gets really... Well, my friends, they're not Christians. I decided to follow the Lord, but they stayed behind. So I do know when to say to go talk to them and when not to. But
Yes, but when you talk to your friends who may be non-Christian, do you have to lie or not tell your wife that you're doing so?
No. Since we got married, I haven't lied to her once about my friends. And,
but did you hear what I said? When you go talk to your friends, do you have to be careful not to let your wife know that?
I sometimes feel like it.
Okay. I think you need to have a talk with her. And does she listen to the Issues of Life?
No, she doesn't. Her English is like half and half.
Okay. Is it possible that her acculturation into this country has made it difficult for her, and therefore she feels very insecure, afraid of losing you?
Well,
you provide a sense of security and stability for her, and therefore she is threatened by many things, not only your previous friends, but any life before her. Anytime you want to move away from her to do something on your own, have your own time and pay a place, she's again threatened by that?
I think she is.
Okay. That issue you cannot solve. You cannot be so devoted, so loved, so loving, to where you're going to resolve that for her.
Yes.
That's something that she has to talk through and talk with someone. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes. I've tried to speak to her about that, and
okay,
you know, she'll say, no, I'm not. I'm very secure, and you know, she'll.
Well, she needs to be shown where this insecurity is leaking out. If you'd like a Spanish referral. Is it a Spanish?
We've talked to our pastor.
Okay.
So we go to Calvary, the Spanish ministry.
Okay.
And he's pretty good at it, but I have a hard time trying to get her there too, because though she's a Christian too, we'll have a fight and we'll talk about it. Okay, we'll go.
You need to tell her this, and that is, everything she's unwilling to face weakens the relationship.
I've told her that before.
Okay. Because you're going to have to, she's going to drive you away if you allow her. Her insecurities will grow, and you'll be forced, if you don't understand otherwise, you'll be forced to give up more and more of your life. in trying to appease her insecurities. She will drive you away if you let her. Don't let this happen to your marriage. Make sure you get with somebody, your pastor, a counselor, Spanish-speaking counselor.
Yes.
Make sure you get with somebody who understands what's going on and can deal with this clinically as well.
Okay.
You must stay on the line. We'll give you some good referrals, and then you can use this number if you wish to in the future.
Thank you very much, John.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Give her the 800 line, Bonnie. Yeah, okay, good. She knew to do that. Oh, that's wonderful. If you do need a Spanish referral, you can give us a call. We've got a couple of Spanish-trained therapists who we can give their phone number and recognize, you know, Joel's situation is very common, and it can be reversed. It can be the husband's whose insecurity is driving his wife away. Your insecurities and the things that you will not face because you fear to face them, you know, just ignore them. They'll go away. Well, where do they go when they go away? They will eventually ruin your relationship. Don't let somebody's insecurities and what they're unwilling to face drive you away from your marriage. Okay, we've got a couple lines open if you'd like to call. Toll free, 1-800-4-ISSUES. That's 1-800-447-7837. Let's talk to Carol. Hello, Carol.
Hello.
Welcome to the Issues, Carol.
Well, I guess I could relate to some of what you were saying to this gentleman about not facing issues.
Yes.
Because my husband is alcoholic, and he has a problem also with pornography, and I didn't realize that until after we got married. And when I say alcoholic, he's a controlled alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't until I went to the doctors about 2 years ago that I realized that he had a problem there.
Okay.
And I told him about it, but it was like he flared up and, like, wanted a divorce. But then he realized he really didn't, and but we're still back, and this comes and goes.
Uh-huh.
And this happens the last couple of years.
And so you and your husband don't have the same life goals?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I'm a Christian. I realize, you know, the older I get, the more important, you know, it is, you know, to live a Christian life and what, you know, what we're here for.
You've continued to evolve, but your husband has stopped.
Right, but I love him dearly, and I've been waiting and waiting. I mean, he'll come out. He started to come out to church this last year once a month, and I, just because I felt like he was threatened, not because he really wants to, but I think he's basically a good guy. He has these hang-ups, but I think he's afraid to let go, that he won't be able to stop.
Stop what?
Stop drinking. He won't have.
Yes, but see, the problem is not the drinking, and the problem is not the pornography. The pornography and the alcohol, they're much more similar, much similar,
mm-hmm.
than they are different.
Mm-hmm.
They are medication to keep him anesthetized or inebriated.
Right.
They're to keep him from not feeling something. I wonder what it is that he's masking or covering with the pornography and the alcohol. Much like food, much like a struggle, much like workaholism, much like gambling.
But what do I do?
That's a very good point.
He came from a family. We just went back to Omaha a month ago, and I brought this up. His father died from alcoholism, and his whole family, they've gone to all different divorces. There's not one stable family that he comes from, and I would think
if you just kind of think this through, it probably has something to do with he never feels a part of somebody. He always feels in jeopardy of losing something. He can't predict that anybody is going to be available, listen to him, or care. And there's something surrounding that kind of thing. When you have so many divorces and so much instability, there's a constant pressure of losing everything. And so you get into a mode of not caring. Because you can care so much that it makes you so stressful, or you can get yourself in a position of not caring. You really do care, but you're trying to pretend as though you don't. And drugs and pornography and other kinds of things are really substitutions. They just help you cope with whatever losses you inevitably think are coming. Stay on the line. We'll give you a couple recommendations. And the rest of you, stay on the line. We've got a lot of program left. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a minute with another Issue of Life. In my conversation with Carol off the phone, I said, Carol, what you're going to have to do is do something different than you've done. You know, when you've got a spouse, a lover, a family member who seems to be lost, they're basically just maintaining, then you have to be very careful that you don't, in some ways, succumb to the same routine of your doing the same thing for him or with him. Those old strategies are not working. One of the first and most courageous things you can do is to admit that, A, you're powerless at this point in terms of doing what you're doing is not working, it's not effective, and recognize that you have to come up with a different strategy. It may be radical, radical in the sense that it may be risky, it may be a risk, it may be brand new. You may not have a lot of confidence with it, but remember, what's happened is that your life is so full of all these messes and pressures and ineffective ways of dealing with life. So you have to find another strategy. And up until this point, Carol has been trying to get her husband into a counselor's office or to the pastor's office. My suggestion to you, my friends, is to stop that. That's right, stop that. Even though he's an alcoholic, even though he's got pornography in his life, stop that and get yourself into a counselor's office or pastor's office, a therapy appointment. Get yourself. I told Carol, you have to get into therapy. And you, with the therapist counselor, have got to come up with a new strategy, a new effective plan that is much radical and much different than you've been trying before. You're going to have to bring the bottom up on him and get him working. But it's very difficult when you think that your basic objective in life is to try to fix these people. And she's got a daughter coming home out of a recovery program with drug addiction. She's now coming home. Supposedly she's sober. Carol, you can see Carol has been basically going through the motions with all these people. And she hasn't had a creative thought probably in years. And that's why oftentimes you want to make a therapy appointment for yourself so that you can get back in the creative input. You can get some good feedback, because God knows you're not getting good feedback from alcoholic husbands and drug-addicted daughters. Okay? Come on, friends. Let's talk to Renee. Hello, Renee.
Hello.
Welcome to The Issues.
Hi, thank you. We have a 16-year-old daughter, my husband and I, and we're having some problems with her dating. Dad doesn't want her to have any dating, you know, and she likes a boy at church. He's 18. And they're getting all kinds of conflict. Pastor doesn't want them to date. He thinks it's inappropriate ages.
Okay, how does your husband feel?
He's uncomfortable with it altogether.
Uncomfortable with dating?
Yeah.
But hasn't forbidden it?
Yeah, he has.
Oh, he has forbidden
them to see each other.
But this is her boyfriend, or?
Well, they like each other.
Okay.
And the boy is a really nice boy. He's a Young Life leader.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he's not supposed to date anybody in Young Life. And they've given him an ultimatum. If he's to like our daughter, he's to leave Young Life. But when he does do that and says, yeah, you know, I've been at 7 years.
How long is this Young Life?
Pardon me?
How long is the Young Life program?
How long is it? It's like every Friday night.
Well, no, but he's a part of the Young Life. And if he wants to date, he has to drop out of Young Life?
Right. Because he can't date anybody that's in it. My daughter is in Young Life.
Okay.
And
so
he can't date anybody in high school, and he just graduated from high school, and she's in high school.
Uh-huh.
So they have these rules.
And your pastor is not comfortable or does not approve of dating either?
He doesn't want these two to date each other.
And why these two?
Because he's a Young Life leader, and he's
uh-huh.
extremely valuable to this church.
Uh-huh.
And
now, he can date as long as he doesn't date in this pool?
Right, in this pool, and they want him to date somebody else that's 18, because they say that it makes a big difference. You know, he's thinking along the lines of maybe marriage, and she's only 16, and she's going to have fun, and she's going to break his heart, and it's just going to mess up Young Life.
Well, I might agree that if you're a leader in an area, you shouldn't date within that pool.
Right.
When we were going to college, we had an agreement that you never date a girl that you work with,
mm-hmm.
and you never date a girl in the same apartment complex.
Right.
So I understand that you wouldn't want to date somebody you're trying to minister to.
Right.
Okay? Like counselors don't date their patients.
Right.
Right?
Right.
All right. But I do not agree. I do not agree that 18-year-old boys should only date 18-year-old girls, because there are some 16 and 17-year-old girls that are far more mature than a lot of 18-year-old boys. So I think it has a lot to do with some very specific things. And you can't make a general rule of thumb. There are some 18-year-old girls that are far, far advanced than 18-year-old boys, and I don't think it would be safe for an 18-year-old boy to date one of those girls either. But you know what? I trust life. And that is, I don't want to save people from... Oh, there's some things I want to save people from, like drugs and alcohol and those kinds of risky things. But, you know, dating and having your heart crushed, or crying over a loss, or things not working out, or even rejection, I don't think that's such a tough thing, and I don't think people should be saved from it. I think they should be talked through it. I think they should learn something from it. I mean, after all, that's what dating is. Dating is finding out how your personality works in conjunction with somebody else's personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, gosh, I know there was one particular church I was talking with, and the pastor felt that college students should never kiss. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just so unhealthy. I think you need to learn to responsibly kiss.
Right.
Like anything, you got to be responsible, right?
Exactly. And, you know, they like to hold hands and things like that. They do peck on the cheek, and everybody's just so uncomfortable with it. And then when he says, okay, I won't.
Well, the unfortunate thing is we as parents make it so difficult for us to parent.
Yeah.
We come up with these oddball ideas. And I know it's based out of fear and based out of good intentions and concern.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like you're washing dishes or cooking.
Well, my 3-year-old wants Jell-O, and if he doesn't get it, he's going to scream. So I'm trying to keep him quiet while I'm talking to you.
Okay. Well, the only point I'm making is that we can, as parents, make it very difficult for ourselves. You know what I mean? And I don't know what to tell you other than, if your husband listens to the Issues of Life, I would love to talk to him about this.
Yeah.
Does he ever listen to the Issues?
Yeah, he does.
Is he there now?
No, he's going to be off for a week tomorrow.
Why don't you have him call me tomorrow?
I will.
I would love to talk to him about his feelings about
mm-hmm.
this.
Yeah.
There's no right or wrong. There's just effective and ineffective.
Right.
We make our lives more complicated by certain, when we parent out of fear.
That has a lot to do with him.
Because, see, our children don't have the fears that we oftentimes do, and so therefore they don't get the point.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Exactly. But, and then he wants to force his point, and he messed up a whole lot at her age. I mean, you think he slept with everybody and anything, and he's just so fearful now that he's, you know, seeing life differently. And
okay, that's what he and I have to talk about, because his past... is controlling her present life.
Yeah, and we need to come to some kind of agreement, because
yep.
these kids are jerked all over the place.
Well, you sound like a reasonable woman, and I'd like to talk to him tomorrow or the next day.
Okay.
Encourage him to call.
I sure will. He'd love to call.
Okay.
Okay.
And what's his first name?
Pierre.
Pierre.
Uh-huh.
Pierre.
Yeah.
Pierre is against dating? A guy named Pierre is against dating?
I know, it's horrible when you're like a sex addict.
Uh-oh.
And these people turn, when they change, they like turn off.
Your husband was a sex addict?
Yeah.
He would admit that?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got...
Well, you see, what's interesting is that it goes from one obsession to the next.
Yeah.
It's the same conflict, and that is control.
Mm-hmm.
Something's got control of him. It may have been a lack of love to begin with, and that's why he sexualized his relationship.
Oh, yeah,
and now it is fear that controls him, and so he's become obsessive.
Yeah.
He and I have to talk.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, my friend.
Talk to you later.
I enjoyed talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you see those excesses that go from one excessiveness to the next. I'm going to talk to Majid in just a moment. Let me just tell you, we've got some lines open. if you'd like to call. If you agree or if you disagree with what I'm saying, please call. Talk to me. As iron sharpens iron, one person will sharpen another. Maybe you have some advice for Renee regarding her husband and their whole decision about dating. I'd like to hear about it. Toll free 1-800-447-7837. Maybe you were raised under that kind of condition. Fear-based parenting. Ugh, nothing could be much more stressful than that. Let me remind you again, tomorrow we're going to be talking about personal power, how to get it and how to keep it at the Holiday Inn, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's $15 at the door for those 2 hours together. I'll have a little lecture on what I mean by power, how to get it and how to keep it, and then we'll have plenty of time for second opinions, questions from the audience. We'll have some music to begin. First 15 minutes, we'll have some music at 7 o'clock. Come over for coffee and tea. It's a opportunity. It's a kind of a meeting place on Tuesday nights, learning throughout the week. Tuesday night, Holiday Inn, 405 Freeway in Lakewood Boulevard, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Let's take our first question here. Let's see. We're going to take a commercial break, right? Let's do it now, and we'll come back fresh with your questions. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a commercial minute or two with some other issues of life.
Deciding how you want your life to end is the key to figuring out what you ought to be doing today. That's the premise of a cassette series by John Jolliffe called Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life. In front of a live seminar audience, John outlines step by step how to reach your life's goals by working backwards from the end. The result is a fascinating analysis of your family, career, emotional development, and more. Ask for the three cassette series, Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life, when you write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Be sure to include 2695 with your request and mention that title, Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life. Or call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard ready. Again, that's The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for Visa or MasterCard users, 1-800-447-7837.
In my conversation with Carol off the phone, I said, Carol, what you're going to have to do is do something different than you've done. You know, when you've got a spouse, a lover, a family member who seems to be lost, they're basically just maintaining, then you have to be very careful that you don't in some way succumb to the same routine of your doing the same thing for him or with him. Those old strategies are not working. One of the first and most courageous things you can do is to admit that, A, you're powerless at this point in terms of doing what you're doing is not working, it's not effective, and recognize that you have to come up with a different strategy. It may be radical in the sense that it may be risky, it may be a risk, it may be brand new. You may not have a lot of confidence with it, but remember, what's happened is that your life is so full of all these messes and pressures and ineffective ways of dealing with life. So you have to find another strategy. And up until this point, Carol has been trying to get her husband into a counselor's office or to the pastor's office. My suggestion to you, my friends, is to stop that. That's right, stop that. Even though he's an alcoholic, even though he's got pornography in his life, stop that and get yourself into a counselor's office or pastor's office, a therapy appointment. Get yourself. I told Carol, you have to get into therapy. And you, with the therapist counselor, have got to come up with a new strategy, a new effective plan that is much radical and much different than you've been trying before. You're going to have to bring the bottom up on him and get him working. But it's very difficult when you think that your basic objective in life is to try to fix these people. And she's got a daughter coming home out of a recovery program with drug addiction, and she's now coming home. Supposedly she's sober. Carol, you can see Carol has been basically going through the motions with all these people. and she hasn't had a creative thought probably in years. And that's why oftentimes you want to make a therapy appointment for yourself so that you can get back in the creative input. You can get some good feedback, because God knows you're not getting good feedback from alcoholic husbands and drug-addicted daughters. Okay? Come on, friends. Let's talk to Renee. Hello, Renee.
Hello.
Welcome to The Issues.
Hi, thank you. We have a 16-year-old daughter, my husband and I, and we're having some problems with her dating. Dad doesn't want her to have any dating, you know, and she likes a boy at church. He's 18. And they're getting all kinds of conflict. Pastor doesn't want them to date. He thinks it's inappropriate ages.
Okay, how does your husband feel?
He's uncomfortable with it altogether.
Uncomfortable with dating?
Yeah.
But hasn't forbidden it?
Yeah, he has.
Oh, he has forbidden.
Forbidden them to see each other.
But this is her boyfriend, or?
Well, they like each other.
Okay.
And the boy is a really nice boy. He's a Young Life leader.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, he's not supposed to date anybody in Young Life. And they've given him an ultimatum. If he's to like our daughter, he's to leave Young Life. But when he does do that and says, yeah, you know, I've been at 7 years.
How long is this Young Life?
Pardon me?
How long is the Young Life program?
How long is it? It's like every Friday night.
Well, no, but he's a part of the Young Life. And if he wants to date, he has to drop out of Young Life?
Right. Because he can't date anybody that's in it. My daughter is in Young Life.
Okay.
And
so
he can't date anybody in high school. And he just graduated from high school. And she's in high school.
Uh-huh.
So they have these rules.
And your pastor's not comfortable or does not approve of dating either?
He doesn't want these two to date each other.
And why these two?
Because he's a Young Life leader. And he's extremely valuable to this church.
Uh-huh.
And
now, he can date as long as he doesn't date in this pool?
Right, in this pool, and they want him to date somebody else that's 18, because they say that it makes a big difference. You know, he's thinking along the lines of maybe marriage, and she's only 16, and she's going to have fun, and she's going to break his heart, and it's just going to mess up Young Life.
Well, I might agree that if you're a leader in an area, you shouldn't date within that pool.
Right.
When we were going to college, we had an agreement that you never date a girl that you work with,
mm-hmm.
and you never date a girl in the same apartment complex.
Right.
So I understand that you wouldn't want to date somebody you're trying to minister to.
Right.
Okay? Like counselors don't date their patients.
Right.
Right?
Right.
All right. Yeah. But I do not agree. I do not agree that 18-year-old boys should only date 18-year-old girls, because there are some 16 and 17-year-old girls that are far more mature than a lot of 18-year-old boys. So I think it has a lot to do with some very specific things. And you can't make a general rule of thumb. There are some 18-year-old girls that are far, far advanced than 18-year-old boys, and I don't think it would be safe for an 18-year-old boy to date one of those girls either. But you know what? I trust life, and that is, I don't want to save people from, there's some things I want to save people from, like drugs and alcohol and those kinds of risky things, but you know, dating and having your heart crushed, mm-hmm. or crying over a loss,
mm-hmm.
or things not working out, or even rejection, I don't think that's such a tough thing, and I don't think people should be saved from it. I think they should be talked through it. I think they should learn something from it. I mean, after all, that's what dating is.
Yeah.
Dating is finding out how your personality works in conjunction with somebody else's personality. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, gosh, I know there was one particular church I was talking with, and the pastor felt that college students should never kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was just so unhealthy.
Yeah.
I think you need to learn to responsibly kiss.
Right.
Like anything, you got to be responsible, right?
Exactly. And, you know, they like to hold hands and things like that. They do peck on the cheek, and everybody's just so uncomfortable with it. And then when he says, okay, I won't.
Well, the unfortunate thing is we as parents make it so difficult for us to parent. We come up with these oddball ideas And I know it's based out of fear and based out of good intentions and concern. It sounds like you're washing dishes or cooking.
Well, my three-year-old wants Jell-O, and if he doesn't get it, he's going to scream. So I'm trying to keep him quiet while I'm talking to you.
Okay. Well, the only point I'm making is that we can, as parents, make it very difficult for ourselves. You know what I mean? And I don't know what to tell you other than, if your husband listens to the issues of life, I would love to talk to him about this.
Yeah.
Does he ever listen to the issues?
Yeah, he does.
Is he there now?
No, he's going to be off for a week tomorrow.
Why don't you have him call me tomorrow?
I will.
I would love to talk to him about his feelings about this. There's no right or wrong. There's just effective and ineffective. We make our lives more complicated by certain when we parent out of fear.
That has a lot to do with him.
Because, see, our children don't have the fears that we oftentimes do, and so therefore they don't get the point.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean?
Exactly. But, and then he wants to force his point, and he messed up a whole lot at her age. I mean, you think he slept with everybody and anything, and he's just so fearful now that he's, seeing life differently. And
okay, that's what he and I have to talk about, because his past is controlling her present life.
Yeah, and we need to come to some kind of agreement, because
yep.
These kids are jerked all over the place.
Well, you sound like a reasonable woman, and I'd like to talk to him tomorrow or the next day.
Okay.
Encourage him to call.
I sure will. He'd love to call.
Okay.
Okay.
And what's his first name?
Pierre.
Pierre.
Uh-huh.
Pierre.
Yeah.
Pierre is against dating? A guy named Pierre is against dating?
I know, it's horrible when you're like a sex addict.
Uh-oh.
And these people turn, when they change, they like turn off.
Your husband was a sex addict?
Yeah.
He would admit that?
Yeah. Yeah, he's got...
Well, you see, what's interesting is that it goes from one obsession to the next.
Yeah.
It's the same conflict, and that is control.
Mm-hmm.
Something's got control of him. It may have been a lack of love to begin with, and that's why he sexualized his relationship.
Oh, yeah,
and now it is fear that controls him, and so he's become obsessive.
Yeah.
He and I have to talk.
Oh, yeah. Terrific.
Okay, my friend.
Talk to you later.
I enjoyed talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you see those excesses that go from one excessiveness to the next. I'm going to talk to Majid in just a moment. Let me just tell you, we've got some lines open. If you'd like to call, if you agree or if you disagree with what I'm saying, please call. Talk to me. As iron sharpens iron, one person will sharpen another. Maybe you have some advice for Renee regarding her husband and their whole decision about dating. I'd like to hear about it. Toll free 1-800-447-7837. Maybe you were raised under that kind of condition. Fear-based parenting. Ugh, nothing could be much more stressful than that. Let me remind you again, tomorrow we're going to be talking about personal power, how to get it and how to keep it at the Holiday Inn, 7 o'clock to 9 o'clock. It's $15 at the door for those 2 hours together. I'll have a little lecture on what I mean by power, how to get it and how to keep it, and then we'll have plenty of time for second opinions, questions from the audience. We'll have some music to begin. First 15 minutes, we'll have some music at 7 o'clock. Come over for coffee and tea. It's a opportunity. It's a kind of a meeting place on Tuesday nights, learning throughout the week. Tuesday night, Holiday Inn, 405 Freeway in Lakewood Boulevard, 7 o'clock tomorrow night. Let's take our first question here. Let's see. We're going to take a commercial break, right? Let's do it now, and we'll come back fresh with your questions. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back in just a commercial minute or two with some other issues of life.
Deciding how you want your life to end is the key to figuring out what you ought to be doing today. That's the premise of a cassette series by John Jolliffe called Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life. In front of a live seminar audience, John outlines step by step how to reach your life's goals by working backwards from the end. The result is a fascinating analysis of your family, career, emotional development, and more. Ask for the three-cassette series, Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life, when you write to The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Be sure to include $26.95 with your request and mention that title, Developing a Plan for the Rest of Your Life. Or call 1-800-4-ISSUES and have your Visa or MasterCard ready. Again, that's The Issues of Life, Box 611, Long Beach, California, 90801. Or for Visa or MasterCard users, 1-800-447-7837.
This is John Jolliffe, and we have Donald on the line. Donald, 17 years old, wants to ask a question about passion outside of a marriage. Is that right, Donald?
Yes, sir.
Good. Go ahead. Ask me your question.
Okay. I hold the belief, okay, and I've always been taught that passion was something for marriage, and I was wondering if there are actually Christian teenagers or people that are able to date and keep their right responsibility and their bodies in check and their mind thoughts in check with another relationship with the opposite sex out there. And because
Are you saying, is it possible to date without having intercourse?
Well, not exactly intercourse, because just your thought life can be corrupt by God, so it doesn't have to be the physical act, but that it's natural to think those things. And I thought that you were supposed to wait, I guess you could say.
I'm not sure I understand. You said something about your thought life being corrupted by God?
No. Not by God, but by being with the opposite sex and experiencing, you know, like kissing and everything.
Okay, well, now what do you mean by your mind corrupted?
Lustful thoughts, I guess you can say.
Well, now what would you define as a lustful thought?
A lustful thought would be basically the desire for that person outside of what God wants for you guys' relationship.
Okay. Now, let me ask you a question. This is a very important question you're asking.
Okay.
All right. Are you on a diet, by the way? Do you have any kind of medical reasons that you should be careful in terms of your diet?
No, I don't.
Okay. You know, there are many things in life. I was just going to use diet as one, in terms of fat, cholesterol, sugar, salt, guns, handguns, you know, should handguns be banned? You know, the kinds of things that in a free society, we have the freedom.
Right.
Okay? Paul said, all things are lawful, but not all things
are not beneficial.
Are beneficial. All things are lawful, but not all things. You know, you don't want to be held under the control of certain things.
Right.
And these are free things, okay?
Right.
I think dating, I think holding hands, I think kissing, I think being available to the opposite sex in terms of conversation,
okay,
closeness, emotional closeness. I mean, I think those are all things that we have to, as young people, learn how to better manage.
Okay.
I think that with so much concern about,
the bad things happening.
Yeah, another word for bad things is promiscuity.
Okay.
With so much discussion about sex and venereal disease and AIDS and all that kind of thing,
uh-huh,
I think we have been alarmed, and rightly so. But I think that what you can do is that you can move so far back that you make it very difficult to manage. So that what we do now include, right along there with communicable disease and gonorrhea and everything else, what we've also included in that list is thoughts.
Okay.
Thoughts like, you know, you want to be closer to a woman, a girl, mm-hmm, then you know God would provide us. You know, the Bible is clear on fornication.
Right.
It is not to be named among you. You know, intercourse before marriage,
right,
and all of that. Those are things that we are you know, as Christians, prevented from doing.
Right.
Okay. But it doesn't mean that you can't have a thought to do that.
Okay.
You see, if you're on a diet, you can think about the cheesecake.
Okay.
But don't do it.
Oh, okay. But
don't make plans for the cheesecake.
Oh, okay. But the whole thing about temptation is that thoughts draw you closer to actually the option of actually doing it.
No, I don't believe so.
You don't?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay, well,
I think you can have a thought that when you are aware of that thought, you then take your thinking in another direction.
Okay.
It's not the thought that leads to the sin. It's the thought that is nurtured, developed, the action planned for, that leads to the ultimate sin.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, because...
So don't be afraid of your thought life, because God, in my way of thinking, God has designed us to be attracted to the opposite sex.
Yeah, I truly believe that.
And therefore, you have to manage that attraction.
Right.
It's not that you should have it or you shouldn't have it. You can't spend years of your life not having it, suppressing it, denying it, calling it sin, and then hope to turn it on one later date at some point at 21 or 24.
Right.
You know what I mean? Okay. You need to learn how to manage it, and some people need to learn how to manage it sooner than others.
Okay.
That's why open discussion, talking about it, you know, with people you trust and in appropriate places, with counselors and therapists and pastors and church leaders and youth, you know, young life leaders and things like that. There should be talk about that. And we should teach people early in life how to manage our feelings, our impulses, and our thoughts.
And desires.
But don't be afraid of them.
Okay.
Just don't develop those thoughts that lead to sin.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Because it's been really, I'm 17 and I've been corrupted by a lot of other things like pornography and movies and everything and the music that's in
but
the
I'll
world.
tell you those kind of temptations,
right.
Typically we get into those things because other issues are going on in our lives. There are other needs that are unfulfilled, other frustrations and conflicts that are going on in our lives, and what we do is we find an audience over here, or we find some way to satisfy a certain need in a symbolic way over here. But there's something else going in our lives. It's not the pure, honest love of a woman that leads us to pornography.
Right.
It's not the honest love and attraction to the opposite sex that leads us to sexaholism.
Okay.
That's a whole different issue.
Okay.
Just because you like a lot of sugar in your iced tea doesn't mean you're going to do cocaine next. You know, even though you might consider them, you know, chemicals.
Addictive,
that's right. So we have to be very careful. There's nothing wrong with being attracted to the opposite sex. There's nothing wrong with thinking you'd like to sit there and make out with her. You just don't want to develop that thought to the point where it causes you to compromise what you your thoughts and your beliefs and your Christian morals.
Okay.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, 'cause
it's a natural temptation.
There are a lot of people. I was just wondering if there are some people who are successful with those relationships that are around my age and that are Christians.
Well, of course there are. Why wouldn't there be?
Well, because of, like I said before, because of what I've experienced has caused me to believe, and I've searched the scriptures.
Yes, but if you're but if you have struggled with pornography,
right,
then you've got another issue going on. So therefore, you're not a pure candidate to say you're 17-year-old and you're trying to deal with dating and you're having trouble. You're bringing into 17-year-old dating this other issue that's going on in your life. And you need to deal with that issue separately than being hormonal 17-year-old male. Do you know what I mean?
Right. So, okay, well, maybe that's my question, because I don't know too many people who have the pure frame of mind that are my age, I guess you can say, that can...
Well, what's a pure frame of mind? See, that's... We go back to...
Undefiled, like that they grew up as a Christian all their life and never was exposed to pornography and...
Well, we've all been exposed to it. That's not the issue. It's the issue is not... See, when you talk about this purified mind,
right.
It sounds to me as though you've never seen a naked woman in a magazine, you've never thought of being emotional or even sexual with a woman. You know, I don't think that exists.
Okay.
I don't think that exists.
Okay.
And what we have to do is manage these issues. One issue is whatever was going on in your life that you found pornography somehow fulfilling. There's something else going on in your life. Some other dysfunction. What?
I said that I wasn't saved.
Well, okay. Something else was going on in your life. And the other issue is being 17 and being attracted to the opposite sex and learning how to manage that attraction, your thoughts, your feelings, your behaviors. Those are two separate issues. Both need attention and direction. And yes, there are people who are successful at overcoming one and learning how to manage the other. But you've got to get in a healthy atmosphere where this is an open discussion. Anything that we can't openly discuss is going to control us ultimately. Do you understand? Okay. My name is John Jolliffe. We'll be back tomorrow, 2 o'clock. Beginning 2 o'clock, tell all your friends on the next issue of Life.